Rome at the University La Sapienza, and he holds the chair of Architecture and Information Technology at the School of Architecture Ludovico Quaroni. He is also the founder and the editor of the international book series The IT Revolution, Information Technology Revolution. And the book series is very popular among scholars and students, and they reach the number of 35 books. He's published in English, in Chinese, and in Italian. And Professor Saggio lectures in many institutions around the world, in the United States, in London at the AA in London, at the ATH in Zurich, at the University of Pennsylvania, in Cornell University, and is a former professor at Carnegie Mellon. He is intensively writing, and for example, just to mention, is out now with his 7th book. Just to mention some of them, the one on Giuseppe Terrani, the one on Peter Eisenman, on Frank Gehry, Louis Sauer, Giuseppe Pagano, and the last one is about Caravaggio. He was pretty much linked with Bruno Zevi, and that's how he was the editor together with the idea of this IT Revolution series. His professional degree in architecture from in Italy, from La Sapienza, exactly, and a Master of Science from Carnegie Mellon, a PhD from the Italian Ministry of Research. And what else did I forget? He found in 2003 the research group Nitro Saggio, which is a very alive and intensively researching into media and information technology. What I can say about him is that he's always with such a intense approach and interest into what is happening in the contemporary scene of architecture. So I welcome in Nino Saggio. I'm sure you will be pleased with this lecture. Thank you, Nino, for coming.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's really a big pleasure to be here in your university to visit Professor Perbellini and Professor Pongratz and to really have a look of the school and how well it's organized and how intense and serious is the student body, how much he really believes in what they're doing. Even with a short visit, I've been experienced around to understand that there is a very interesting and intense work here. So I'm really glad to be here and to give you this lecture, which will be composed by many different layers. Some of them are quite conceptual and quite intense, and others will present you projects and movies and ideas. So you're going to be exposed to thinking and ideas from a different range of sources, but we're really trying to build a very important point that is really a way to look at space and to operate into space in information era in which we are. And probably our notion of space is different, the way that we can approach it in all different levels is different. So this is what we're going to talk about for around, I guess, logical negotiation would be around 1 hour and 15 to 20 minutes is what we may expect from a formal lecture. So be ready. What's going to happen is this, that as you can see, we are in the website, and it is my habit to lecture out of my website. This is very important because people that are interested can go back to the lecture and actually see the material, re-listen the audio, as you have noticed I'm recording it, and following the links And so use the lecture as a base of further exploration. So in order to do that, you must know where the lecture is in order to access it. On the other side, it's not very nice to put up the material in a formal way before it is given to the public. That's why the compromise is rather peculiar. If you go in Google and you type my name, you end up on my website, which is this. The website is really, this is the home page of the website. Each section brings to all sorts of things. This is the book series that we're just discussing, and this is what's happening just right now, a series of lectures and talks and events that are happening around here in this moment. I am coming actually from New Orleans, and from New Orleans I did the Mississippi ideally, and then I arrived to St. Louis. I didn't do it physically, so I'm giving a lecture there, and now here I am with you. So you must know where the hidden link is in order to achieve the lecture. And the hidden link is here in this little element. So when you click here, here we are. We are in the lecture today. I'm doing it right of the web. I think that your connection will be, I hope, fast enough. But that probably will be better if I open it locally. So I will have another version that is local, but it's the same, okay? I'm doing this just for the matter of time. So this is important. So you can, or the two or three of you that wants to follow better and to read, probably, or even look again the movies and things, you can do it this path. The link will be public in a short time, but for now it's something that we share in this particular moment, okay? So now that you know the trick, let's move to what the menu is. What we are going to build is really what the thesis that we really want to share with you is really this idea that space is information. Probably space, the best way to look at space is always being information, but this is surely something very important that we understand today because we are an information age. We are going to do this kind of intellectual promenade in this 1 hour, 15 minutes or so, in order to build that point. And in order to build it, we are using all sorts of different material. Basically, this is kind of the menu of the way that we are going to move. The first part, the first one and two parts are right, kind of easy in a way. They will just summing up certain issues that most of us are really familiar with. One is the difference between the industrial city that we basically left in our show and our past, and the information city that we tend to live in. More and more urban centers around the world are really cities that are very different from those in the past, and the information is an important aspect of that. Second concept is the changing notion of time in our days. Why we live a perception of time and a way to live time in a very different way, and all the implication of that notion of different idea of time with the way that we design, and particularly with the way that we think about city space and urban spaces. Now, points 3, 4, 5, and 6 are kind of the center of the lecture that moves to a series of discussion that has really to do with the cognitive aspect, how we can start approaching the concept of information, the concept of space, the relationship between space and information in order to start to create the elements for our thesis. All this part so is the center that is in some way important. Number 7, number 8 is what is space? Space as information is basically the result of that process. And then we have 9 and 10 that we can go back to some works that has been done either by myself or by not by myself. I'm not an active designer since 25 years probably, but people in the group of the NIFO group that was mentioned by Professor Perdellini, as well as other designers that are involved with this. So this is the menu. So get ready, because certain part will be active and others will be more intense conceptually. Now, at the beginning, industrial city versus information cities, some key difference. Well, let's start to approach this problem of the presence of information in today's society. Just look at this diagram, for example. Everything related to the information, to the industrial city and the way to build the city as well as building the architecture was in some way related with a series of concepts that were all derived by the industrialists in one way or the other. Clearly, there is this idea of phases, of linear phases, like one thing happened before one, another one, and then another in a kind of linear sequence. Okay. All right. Okay. Yes. Thanks. And the idea of the assembly line in some way was a key idea of the old way of approaching problems in the industrial time and of course in the city. So this drawing, this painting by Mondrian, in some way is really highly symbolic of that idea of a kind of assembly line, that kind of process, the kind of continuous process was really very much projected from the idea of the production, the actual production of the goods, of the machinery, to the production of the city, the design of the city, and actually how the city was inhabited. And this painting by Rauschenberg really shows a profound difference. You see a series of layers that are combined one with the other, some layers that belong even to the past and some layers that belong to the present, and so the whole approach is completely different. This is particularly applied, of course, when we have to create projects and ideas in cities in which history has a profound impact. Imagine, for example, many situation in Europe. Another key idea is this, again, in the industrial city, that kind of chain was very important. The city was really thought as a large factory in some way, and was intended as a piece of machinery itself. It is pretty clear in this very famous Le Corbusier plan. While on the right you see the idea of interconnection, you see the idea of the interrelationship, and it is really a completely different environment. So like from the idea of the chain becomes the idea of the net and of the interconnection. Of course, the way of making architecture also changed very much because of the shift in paradigm. The basic idea of the industrial time was to create perfect artifacts, perfect objects as a piece of machinery that you can put on a surface to sit there as a perfect object in its perfect functionalism, creating its own set of rules, projecting out of its presence a set of rules to the outside. While, as you know very well, contemporary design are much more intermingling, are entering in between, they are taking forces from the context around. There is no more that difference between background and foreground. They belong to a series of common rules. So really the way it is changed, not only for formal reasons, is because there is a profound difference in the way that the city is organized from a strictly productive point of view. It's not only an effect matter, it's just that everything is changed or tend to be more and more changed because we are in the third wave. And as you know, I'm quoting the title of a famous book of now many years ago, more than 20, by Alvin Toffler, that was exactly explaining that we are in the information age and economic values have changed. The way that things are produced are completely different. They even the people that are rich are completely different. You know, in the past, we were thinking of the great owner of industry as the richest, and how we very well known today, the richest are the people that own the information. So something that is very light, right? Produce software or software of software or the software of software of software, and those are becomes the richest. Now these things are impacting the city. These are typical, Ingbert Steiner, very well known perspective of the modern cities done in the 20s, and we can see it, that really the city was thought as a factory in some way, and with separation of cycle and separation of traffic and all that. And if we look at the image with more attention, we will notice something that is really interesting, that we don't see in a single tree in the whole image. Because the whole idea was that the city was a piece of machinery seeking and conquering the space. As everybody knows, around the whole world, there is a profound shift in the relationship between nature and city, artifacts and environment, architecture, environment, and nature. This is not only because of a more conscious ideas or for many reasons that can have to do with technology, ecology, and all that, but it's also a result of a different way of production. The industry tend to be smaller and smaller. There are more and more robots around. Many industries are dislocated outside of the world, so outside of the most civilized country. That's why large portion of cities are became usable again. The so-called brown areas, that is a phenomenon that is known by 25 or 30 years. And in those areas, it's possible to bring back nature back into the city, environment back into the city in a combination that was not possible before. And this is, I think, is the best example that I found of this concept. Is basically is we are in Seoul, in South Korea. And what they've done is exactly this. Around the downtown, they have highways such as this, and some of these highways were being done by covering existing little rivers. And so, in the last 5 years, they completely took it out, the highway, bring it back, the river and the landscape. And this is not done for 5 feet or 50 feet, it's done for 3 or 4 miles. So it's very important action, and then it symbolically and from many points of view brings back nature to the city. Now, so information plays into the city in very different ways, and we can, this image is a work of a designer and scientist that really finds new way of hybridization between nature and architecture, even creating so-called inhabitable space that can grow in water and can be inhabited and then eaten. So it's very interesting research I'm moving all around in these areas. But now I wanted to give you a sense of this kind of process, although to a superficial level, in action. So we can see this building. At the beginning we can see it very superficially, then we can discuss it a little bit more. We are in Seoul, Korea. In Seoul, in Korea. We are approaching a building, and from this logo we understand that it is a building that has to do with phone. It's like ATM, whatever. It's a company of telephones. They are making this skyscraper, and you make it all right. It's okay. It looks pretty familiar in a shape. There are several architectural motifs that are similar to rainfall at Oma for a series of reasons. For example, there is all the basement and the underbasement, a series of actions that are typical of their way of making things. Then we can see, then you can see the shape that is rather nice or rather interesting. It's not a parallelepiped, but with something distorted in a way that creates some tension around, nice distortion. And then we have seen probably the scheme that are the different elements of the scheme that are moving like a bit in a little bit of a natural element, like it is a fish scheme or something like that. Then of course there is the autumn, which has more than one level, with a lot of greenery inside, of course, and we saw some electronic over there. And you say, all right, it's okay, it's a nice building, why is showing us this? And then here we see those elements along the street, and we think, all right, nice, elegant, who knows what they are needed for, but it's kind of nice design. And now we are in the evening, we arrive to the building again in the evening, and we start seeing that there are lights, and there are light cycles in the building. So they are, the building emanates light in a series of different cycles and processes. And although your recording is not that clear, it gives, I think, enough the idea of what's going on. So why I'm showing you this, and why I think it is interesting, and in some way will show you that idea that to a first quite of superficial level, information became an important part of an architecture that is done, at the level of a skyscraper. So we are not talking of a little pavilion. This is important to understand. We are talking of a skyscraper. Okay. You can see it again. Well, there are a series of things that we may understand now a little bit better. And is how all these elements that we saw separately are actually interconnecting one with the other. Okay, let's start with these first elements over here that are these things sitting on the street. These are actually interactive elements that in some way relate with each person with the building. Since those are speakers, but they are not only speakers, are conceptually are able to recognize you if you want, are able to say hello, Antonino, welcome to Seoul. Ideally, the same thing that they can do is that they can say, you know, that there is Maria Rita Perbellini by any chance, that is just by any chance a few blocks away today. These are things that are completely possible in today's information society. Because as far as you want to negotiate a certain information between you and the environment is ready to react with that, right? So, in this moment, I don't remember exactly at what level they are, but that is the idea. It's an interactive system of relationship between you and the building, you and the environment. Of course, the minimum thing that you can imagine is when you pass, you say hello, just with a sensor, right? But the process, since more all of us, as we are going to see, are in a second, we are going to have instruments as the extension of our knowledge or our body, as we are going to discuss in a second, that would be it. So that are not only nice or not nice, that is secondary, but they are nice in reality. Elements of mediation with the exterior, they are also very important element of information relationship between the building, the environment, and the user. Okay, these are architectural themes that we could discuss in another occasion. What is nice inside it, as you can see, all the atrium part, all the public part of the building are creating ready for installation of electronic art. So if the whole setting is ready, each artist can do his own setting every month or so. And of course, this presence, it is combined together with natural elements. This is a trend that has been very common. And of course, you can have all sorts of interactive way of communicating and searching information. Probably some of you know the Prada store, just to make an example, where these things are common and tend to be common, more common and common. Why I'm showing you this is because over there, these things start to become a standard. This is what is interesting. So while we live in I live in Rome, and so we don't have that sense of things happening around us, or even if we leave, for example, I come in from St. Louis, where I saw a show on these things, and actually the curator of this show just came to me after the lecture, didn't know me, and say, and she was telling how much effort she was putting in making that show, just to show the development, the developer, that these things may happen, because in St. Louis nobody knows about these things. So we are in a civilized America. I don't know what is the situation over here, but in some parts of the world, these things tend to be normal, are becoming normal. That's why I'm showing a skyscraper. I'm not showing an installation. An installation has been done since 10 or 15 years or 20 years. And then there is this other thing, since this is a good architecture in my opinion, there is also this idea that it is extremely bright and extremely elegant, I think. That when you look at the building during the day, you think, all right, this kind of distorted shapes is kind of a welcome sound at this moment. We like that. We prefer to have this distorted form than the Mies van der Rohe cube. We can discuss why we prefer that, generally speaking. And then we also like, generally speaking, this idea of permutation or kind of digitalization of surfaces. In this case, we see the skin, so the distorted form together with the skin are kind of nice, all right? The sun cut in different shadows, it's interesting. But then, when we discover that basically these points here, are the sensible places for the light gain. So, because there is there where the lights happen. So, it's integral to the building design of this. So, the final effect, that is like the building is talking to us and is reacting to us, because, of course, the light can be done by an artist that wants its own perfect cycle and do whatever, but can also be conceived interactively, you know, for example, telling different things, or, you know, we can do it whatever we want, basically. So, this is an example of why information, we are talking to a very superficial level, while information have an impact here. I want to show you also, where it is, a project of one of my class, because you must have I think it's an important sensation that you must have. Okay, I'll do it locally. I don't want to do it there. I'll do it locally. It will be faster. Okay. For example, I teach several classes. One of the most important ones is called Information Technology and Architecture. That is a class that follows very much the philosophy of the book series. For those that, of you that know the book series, you know that it's not a technical book series, so it doesn't really teach how to do this and that. It explains you a series of reasons and research that are in certain areas, and there are some touches and some indication how you actually can do things. But generally, it's like that. And the course follows that approach to a certain extent. Each student produces complex research and complex projects. And this is just one case, and this one are done in a lot of details. They are studied in many points of view. For example, in this case was a gasometer. And this gasometer was not in use anymore, and has been studied the way to transform the gasometer, the great gasometer, it's British, not gasometer. Well, you see the picture. Come si chiama? Okay, all right. the storage tank, how you change that in a way of sending information to the city, interacting with the city. So this is just a glimpse, but to tell you that the system that things are done, the way of things that you can project, how the lights can be done, etc., what can be a reasonable, costly way to do it, etc., 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 are being actually studied, and the history and all that about that, the different system of nebulization, etc., etc. So what you can see then is we can go back here. So here, for example, there are all kinds of simulation of this, of the different events and the different ways that you can use to in that building. And so all this has been simulated. This is already a work of several years ago, but really goes to that idea that information becomes an integral part of the city. And of course, with this world, we cannot discuss about this now, is intended a large number of events. Okay, so now that we moved on, all right. Now, let's tackle number two. We have 10, remember? Now we are interested on another topic. We are interested in the changing notion of time. We live a condition of time that is very different than that one of the past. Basically, with all that idea of industrial cycle, chain, assembly line, was always related to that, the idea of some kind of circularities of activities, that you do certain things in a certain moment of a day, and then you do other activities, and then you do other activities, and then you do other activities. And while today the time tend to be continuous in some way, digitalized in some way. This is a very well-known example by one of the researchers in the field of IT. It's really, from that idea of a kind of ordered, sequential time, it became an idea of digitalized time in which you can do a lot of things simultaneously. And the idea of that, so if you think at the question where the clock is, something very simple, such as where the clock is, and at the industrial time clearly had that idea of the time and the clock in some way extremely well localized. They are all sitting on schools, they are sitting on the factory, they were sitting on schools. I'm coming from New Orleans, and I went again to see the Piazza di Italia of Charles Moore, and there the biggest thing is the clock, you know, that is sitting on, just there. So it's really that idea. So you can also answer to the question when the watch, when the clock is, that is localized. While today, if we ask where the clock is, we say, well, it's in the computer, it's in the phone, it's in this internet, it's everywhere, it's in the fridge, it's in the microwave, it's everywhere. That idea that seems to be quite simple and almost not interesting, in reality is very interesting, because the time becomes something profoundly different, and all of us know that very well, because it's the computer itself that represents that. While the machine, the 4T machine, was the ideal product to move you from one place to the other, to another, to another, to follow that kind of chain way of living the city, The computer today is exactly that, that allows the kind of digitalization of time, because as everybody knows, with the computer we do our email, we do our game, we do our exploration, we get our information, we do our work, believe it or not, which is something that could be completely inconceivable for other generations, how you can jump from a work condition, a serious work condition, to a kind of ludic game playful condition, to an information condition, and to other conditions simultaneously. So in some way, like the 4T was the object that was symbolized the industrial world, and in some way its ideas were projected in the way of conceiving building and making building and making cities. In some way the personal computer today became something that at the same time it is the results and the tool, or better saying, the instrument of this new way of thinking. And it basically is also a productive system. It's not only an aesthetic reason or other type of reason. It's a profoundly productive economic reason. So we understand that time that we can consider something fixed or similar is completely different. It's completely different. Another nice example to tell that it is how probably an appointment between two persons, or probably a couple, can be done in different epochs of the story. I was thinking about this, that I think it's a very nice example. If I think of Dante and Beatrice, Dante is the famous poet of Italy, of medieval time, and Beatrice, of course, is Jean Glover, because basically they never get married or anything. Anyway, if they have to find an appointment, they probably have said, well, we see on the tree on the hill just outside the wall at, I don't know, when the moon arrives, or what can you say, when the sun goes down, or something like that. Something like that. So we'll be that idea will be kind of vague, mystic, very related to nature and to events. If Dante and Beatrice will meet in 60 or 70 years ago, a typical modernist time, what they will say? They will say, okay, we see 5th Avenue 563 at 15 minutes past 6 o'clock. Absolutely exact appointment. As everybody of you knows, the new generation tend to have a constant negotiation about space and time and appointment. This is something that makes me crazy completely. At least in Europe, everybody's like that, I guess, probably over here too. So, through the cellular phone, location, place, and time are constantly negotiated. And it's very different. I noticed that the new generation have the kind of precise appointment system that previous generation tend to have, because it's a constant negotiation. So the whole idea of time space changes because of that. Just to give you another example, a keen one though, because that's why those things happen. Different generations cannot communicate to each other, you know, because there really is a substantial difference in the way that you intend certain things. Now, not only time changes, but particularly space, and we are approaching more or less to certain concepts that are closer to the heart of the conference. The concept of space also changes. This is something that, as artists, you must understand. Space is not just something that is out there. Space, particularly for an architect, is the result of a process that is extremely more complex, and particularly has to do with your intellectual and scientific way of understanding space and to measure space. The space that medieval architects were looking at and they were experiencing was a space profoundly different from the space that Renaissance architects use, manipulate, and design. Why? Simple. Because the perspective arrives. The knowledge of perspective arrives. What is perspective? Perspective is the first time, somebody said that was known before and then lost, but that is a secondary issue, was the first time that humanity understood a way to measure space and to bring space back to a flat reproduction, and particularly was the way to understand the deformation of space in a scientific manner that means that can be bring back their measure to reality. So that process, it is an incredible changing in vision. And that changing in vision was not just sitting over there, like, all right, but it's something completely different happened, that a new architecture has to be done, has to be created, in order to express in a consistent way the rules of perspective. This is the famous Santo Spirito, that is something completely different from the Gothic architecture. Because the Gothic architecture was not done to be perspectivalized. There was not a knowledge about perspective. It was done for all series of other rules. But the insertion of the classical proportion, of modularity, of unified elements in space, to essential system of control of space, and all that, it becomes as a strict relationship with perspective. It's the way that perspective, that intellectual way of looking and understanding space was reified, was shown into architecture. So space is not something that is just there, it is something that depends and changes in different moments of history. From time to time I put these little links, and these little links are showing you some other materials. For example, in this case there is a book in the series that is called Markland, and this is my preface that you can read that deals with these issues. So those little links can be useful for if you want to go more on the issues. And then there is another aspect that is very important for us. It is the prosthesis, or how do you call it?
Prosthetic,
okay. What does it mean? Oh, this is very important. Is that human being has a very important difference from other animals. That is that we are able to build exactly extension of our body and our knowledge. Those extension really opens up new dimension of our understanding in a profound way. Now it's interesting to understand what is a good word to express that. And for years I've been kind of sitting and using in a very, well, without really thinking, the word tool. And of course tooling, that becomes also very familiar. Now, without going really in the etymology of the word in English, surely coming from Latin and coming from French and Italian, if tool is translated in French in util or utensile, is not a word that works at all. Because there is a big difference between tool and the right word to tell this, that is instrument. This topic has been brought up by different epistemology, particularly by Alexandre Poiré, that really build up a point in the difference between util, we may call tool, and instrument, that we call instrument. He told us something very, very nice, I think, that is that the instrument is a materialization of the spirit, which is a great definition if you start to think about it. Or if you look at it very in a much more simpler way, you cannot think of the telescope as a tool or as an utensil. You never think about that. Because that is really one instrument that on one side represents the effort of humanity for the first time to really look at the sky and looking at the universe from bottom up, from being on the ground and trying to understand the rules of the universe. And as you know, that creates an incredible revolution, because for the first time science becomes the way to look at it. And so the instruments are really the materialization of that spirit, of that idea. They are not neutral at all. They are not neutral at all. They are really, they bring a lot of value into it, a lot of intellectual value and a lot of And they often the tool create real revolutions. And we can do all another lecture here showing the relationship between the telescope, Galileo, and Borromini. That is, as you can see in that image, the same process of really starting from bottom up. All the architectural, previous architecture was thinking as kind of piling up of elements going from the level of the, you know, the spirituality and the assemblage of things that are coming from top down. And in painting, that was even more evident. While these two guys, Caravaggio, Borromini, and Galileo, they really inverted the process and had a process really going bottom up. And this is strong in as Caravaggio, in which all composition starts from here, that, and from Borromini, that everything can only be conceived as a dynamic process going bottom up. And this is the same process that we saw in the telescope. That, of course, it means a lot of symbolic and philosophical, political, ethical, and all these three guys risk their life, you know, in different ways because of that. So it's important. So instrument, and Maria Rita was so kind to remind this little Caravaggio book that I wrote. In that case, the whole concept was the relation between the camera oscura, the mirror, and Caravaggio painting, not simply as a technique, which is pretty easy and has been done, but really showing the interrelationship because the camera oscura has to bring to a new process of painting, etc. So now we are approaching another important theme, that is what I call looking inside. So if these things are really processes, are really expansion of our knowledge, are really systems that we can acquire an understanding of other dimensions, that means that they are serious and we must really look inside them with a lot of attention. It's not just an hammer or a nail. Are really elements that embody in themselves a profound knowledge and often bring a complete revolution to a really shift of paradigm because of their existence. Imagine just what photography meant for painting, what kind of revolution in some way the presence of photography meant for painting, just to make an example. So that's why this image is one of my best, always of my all-time favorite. That is Steve Jobs at the age of 22 or 23 at a computer fair at the Apple One that was looking inside a chip. That's why I like it, very symbolically, that imagine. Because I mean that you must really start a dialogue of technology that is profound, because technology, information technology, and all the things that are there are instruments. So they are embodies in there a challenge of change that is very important to understand, and the new architects of the new generation are understanding, and basically that is the whole story of the book series, and also of my friendship with Maria Rita and Christa, that nowadays almost 10 years, because they wrote Natural Born Card Designers, and there is another book coming out soon, which will not say the title until it's out. Now, let's go to this point very briefly. So, must be, in order to really express what is in that image, and all that, I will need minimum 1 hour. I will just give a glimpse of that. Would be very interesting to start thinking about time in relationship to space, of course, and particularly use time as a way to define space. This is quite interesting because shows us a lot of things, a lot of rules in some way. One of the simplest ones that we can do it in this short time, just to give you a glimpse of that way of thinking, it is just imagine for a second to live in a world that is confined only in 2 dimensions. So the only thing that you can do in that world is basically exploring it from one edge to the other. The only information that you can have on that word, since you are class 2, will not be visual, but will be based on experience, so you can understand how much time you need to go from one edge to the other. This is something that, of course, comes from Flatland, the famous novel of the ending of the other century. Now, let's start to do this as a very simple exercise to understand what I mean. So if you are confined in a world that is two dimensions, if time is something that you need, is the only way that you are actually experiencing that space, basically, to go from this point to this point, you take a certain amount of time, so it is like that. But if you start tilting this, it basically takes the same amount of time to go from one place to another, because it doesn't change the length of the cord. And of course, if we become closer and closer, almost touching, will always be the same. But if you change our vision from a world of two dimensions, in which it seems that we are confined, to a world of three dimensions, you immediately understand there is a new set of rules that apply to this system that goes from point T to point T1. You don't necessarily do this, but you can jump three-dimensionally. So this idea shows what basically a series of rules that applies when you jump from one system to another system. Certain rules that tend to be applied to one system don't apply anymore to another system, because you are changing system of reference in some way. This is something, of course, that has in physics and Einstein and all those all kind of implications. In our case, it's only needed to really build the idea that a series of action like changing a system of reference or extending your knowledge and your potential, like with the prosthesis and with the tools and with the technology, will allow you certain level of knowledge or certain new issues that are completely different. So this is one of the reasons why this all this technology is not too neutral, but is really changing many ways of our life and can change many ways of our design. We are approaching to the thing. So now let's ask ourselves then, what is space? Let's arrive to the center of the discussion. What is space then? And how we can decide space? Okay. And let's assume this very important point, that this space is really information. We can see this moving that really shows quite well what we want. This is a Marcos Novak installation of several years ago. He did other installations similar, more advanced technically. I saw the last one in Venice Biennale now, a few weeks ago. But this, I think, is still the most effective one, or that one that I like the most. Now, what's going on here? It is very simple. The issue is, space exists or does not exist, or can I imagine space that is not visible? A concept of space, a space that is not visible, can exist? That is the question mark. And if you think like that, since we are thinking basically only visually, we tend to think that the question has no sense. But when we start to use our processes of information technology, we really understand that an invisible space not only may exist, but can be activated, can be used, can be designed, can be manipulated. So what is happening here is basically there are a series of sensors, as you understood, I think, pretty well, that basically are running on top of that of these elements. Like, you know, there is sense is a sensor space, right? That when you penetrate, okay, with your hand, of course the sensor, let's remember this. The sensor captures different movements of your hands, and then that information is moved back to the computer, and the computer may manipulate it in different ways. And we can see here in three ways. One way, clearly, it is the sound that is algorithmically related to sound, so you can manipulate sound. The second one, it is clearly, and you can show it in the projection before, in this moment on the screen that you are actually creating space. The third one, of course, is that you can frozen certain image, a certain moment of that, and then send it to a machine to produce the spatial results. So this is something that it is interesting because it starts to show you. Okay. It's not frozen. Okay. It starts shows you exactly that idea that space can be considered in some way informational. But now we must do another step, really a kind of a cognitive step. We really have to understand a little bit better. So, in order to understand space, let's move it to color instead. Let's make our discussion with color, because color has, in some way, it is an interesting topic. So we can ask ourselves, does color really exist? Is out there, really? So we can start to investigate this topic. And the first thing that we have discovered is that really color is contextual. It's not true that our perception of color is absolute. It really depends. It's contextual. We can see certain range of color depending in which kind of environment we are. So this is a typical example. We can see those two elements that it is are clearly overlapping to each other. We can clearly see the middle one as an overlapping of the two colors. But if we just move them apart a little bit, immediately that aspect is gone. So the perception is really related to a series of contextual things. This is amazing, because something that we believe really objective, like transparency, is not objective at all. It's really contextual. And if we think at the way of transparency, we can do just another lecture on this topic, because again, is if you imagine the idea that the functionalism was thinking about transparency was really as an objective revelation of the world and of architecture and architecture through the world, etc. was absolutely objective. And if you think of the idea in which today we are playing with transparency, it's completely different. It's really contextual. It depends. We play with, we make it phenomenological. You know, just imagine the world of Jean Nouvel, to make an example. Believe it or not, this topic, this idea of transparency is something not objective but phenomenological, was developed by the famous Texas Rangers that are so well related to the, you know, to the imagination of architectural culture of Texas, done many things, but surely the Texas Rangers. So Colin Rowe wrote with Crosby that thing. Now, the second aspect that is interesting, so color is definitely contextual, and even transparency is contextual. Second aspect is that color is really physiological, really depends in how the bodies of the receiver it is built. Birds can see an immense range of colors, much higher than ours, because their eyes are built different. They have four cones, and while the all normal mammals have only two cones, so with two cones, you can see only in black and white. And the birds have four cones, and so they see a very large degree of color. So they see a completely different world. Animal and the human, the reason is simple, because the mammals were all developed out of night animals. So where color was not an important issue in the night, and other capabilities were important. And as you know, we see a certain range of color as human beings, because we, in our history, we developed a third cone that allows us to see a larger range of color. But anyway, these examples are clearly, they are there to show you the kind of depth of difference, of things that different animals see. So they really look at a different world, so it's different. So, color is contextual, it is physiological, and interestingly enough, it has a very important cognitive aspect. Because if we ask an Eskimo what color is the eyes, he will have probably a choice of 20 to 25 words, because they have many different whites to describe the color of the eyes. It depends on many things, how thick it is, you know, how solid, how, you know, whatever, you know, if there is fish, is this fishy, not fishy, or whatever. So they have many, many words to describe the color of eyes, while for us it's only one. Same thing if you ask to a person from the Mediterranean area, what color is the sky? We have many words to describe, to have the word that for an Anglo-Saxon is just either blue. If this blue is blue, white for a Mediterranean has many, many words, turquino, celeste, azzurro, and so on and so forth. And I found this concept, this is a very nice concept, described in a poem by Alexander Pushkin, that was a Russian poet that came to Italy, and he wrote these two lines. I mean, this is the whole poem, but these two lines are very nice, I think, to tell that. He said that Italy is a place where the color of the sky is of an inexpressible blue, okay? Because it didn't have the word, you know, an inexpressible blue. It's a very nice, I think, idea. So the color is also depending on cognitive level. So at the question, if color exists or does not exist, the answer is very simple. Electronical radiation do exist. Color depends on these three factors, and those three factors combined define what from the transmitter to the receiver an information pass through. It really is cognitive, it's physiological, and it's contextual. It is an information that the environment sends us, and we are able to receive it differently because we as a receiver are built different. So that negotiation between environment and the being is clearly a negotiation of information. And we are really dealing in that relationship. So color is definitely information. It's not something that is out there. It's not out there. Electronic radiations are out there. But the way it arrives to us is information. Same thing happens for the other things. And clearly space belongs to exactly the same reasoning. Space is information and exactly the same approach. Matter exists, conformation of matter exists, but the way that we are able and we enter into a negotiation with that we call space, is basically based on an information exchange. And again, that information exchange is mutuated by many things. Our body's build is crucial. Because if we are a worm or a caterpillar, we are experiencing this space in a completely different way. If you are a microbe, we experience the space in completely different ways. If we are a bird, we are experiencing the space in a completely different way. The space is different at the end because really the information that transmits it is different. So this is very important to understand, not only from, let's say, a generic point of view, but particularly because we are designers, and we are designers in the informational age. So these matters are very hot. Are very odd. It's very interesting to understand these issues. So we are slowly landing, okay? Don't be afraid. We basically attach the center of the matter. Now it becomes in some way easier, alright? We are just going to see examples and making kind of little discussion. But basically, the main point was built. I had the great fortune to be involved in some conferences with astronauts. Great admiration for astronauts for many reasons. But one, it is because they experience space in a completely different manner, of course. Because they live in zero gravity. And living in zero gravity, that means that the set of information that we tend to negotiate with the space are completely different from the set of negotiation that are used to. So, in that conference happened in Istanbul, and after, as often you do after conference, you go and see monuments. And we went to see Santa Sofia in Istanbul, which, besides being one of the most interesting Roman buildings ever built for its size, for its importance, it happened to have this strange image like that. That it was a scaffolding that was exactly dividing at half of it. And of course, in my imagination, immediately the astronauts and the ramp in which you send rockets to the moon, came immediately. But the important thing was not that. The important thing was really the idea, interconnected with the Marcos Novak movie that you saw before, that the space through technology can be full of information, can be activated in different ways. So the matrix that here you see as a physical matrix, you must imagine as a virtual matrix. And these things are possible, like this. We can do it, we can design, the technology is just there. We have all sorts of things to basically have more information in the space through these processes. You know, just imagine the technology, the RFDI technology and other technologies that can actually, not only sensor, that can basically have information in the space. So, in other words, you don't need to be a bird or an astronaut to really understand the importance of this little corner and things like that, because the astronauts were telling how they have to put the eye things in the space in order to go under, because everything is continuous, no? So, there is not the difference that we have for us. So, but basically, a space can become something completely different, activated in very different ways. Everybody knows this image. It's a movie of several years ago now, and we all of us probably remember Tom Cruise activating the space feeding information, reorganizing information, and create a whole thing. So, these issues are all issues that have to do with design in our time. Now, I don't want to be overwhelming, because I noticed that I talked for 1 hour, 20 minutes or so. Basically, the lecture can end in very different ways. I can show some design that has been done in Rome, particularly in graduation thesis, in which arrives another element. On top of all this, becomes one element that for my philosophy of teaching and of researching is crucial, the fact that all these things must be applied to situation of crisis, or situation of difficulties. For a while I was doing, as everybody else, experimenting with information technology, using all different fields and subfields, and a lot of them has to do with installation and things like that. More, I'm trying to work with students and other in other occasions. We really try to find very difficult situations in terms of environment or in terms of other type of crises that may happen, and use our imagination, our potentialities, and the impact of information technology really to tackle those situations. And at the beginning, it's very difficult. You really don't understand why, to make an example, dealing with the problem of the blocking of the city because you are excavating subways has nothing to do with information technology. It's just a crisis. But when you start really thinking of it and you use imagination and creativity, you end up with incredible results in dealing with difficult situations. It always is a key. That is beginning at the beginning, but becomes more and more interesting. So I can show you projects that are done in that idea. For example, this one is a really beautiful one. This one deals with the idea of the body as a way of creating space, and all this is applied to dance, and this is done because the student was an ex-professional dancer that had to stop dancing because of an accident, and then basically for the final work I kind of urged him to reface this crisis and this problem and start to understand how dance could be useful as in a process of design, so I can't spend time on that, but it's very, very detailed the way how really the body can be used as a machine to create space. And it's extremely articulated also in the relationship between different movement of classical dance and different formation of spaces in action. And all this, this project has three or four steps. There's also a virtual client that you see here to put the actual building. So they're a complex story. I think for the sake of time, we cannot. I just wanted to show you, to finish up, a work of Nitro. Because it's little, it is more or less the same size of Marco's one, but it's a little bit different for certain issues, and I think that I am very fond of it. Now, what is the project? In 5 minutes I will be over, okay? Now, the project, it is located in a garden in Florence, that is called the Sonar Garden, and it is a garden that is done together by a musician that particularly deals with electronic music and a landscape architect, gardener, landscape architect. What they do all sorts of hybrid structures that are half vegetable and half electronic in some way. And those create those hybrid structures. They do a lot of these things. So speakers are hidden in different ways, or there are forms that hidden the speakers, and the music is done for that particular situation. So the music composition is done for that particular situation and all that. Just I show you something that I like it very much, that I call it a digitized solar wall, because you see the structure, there are those bushes. Clearly in the bushes there are speakers, and there is a whole technology which you can, you see behind, that you can keep the right level of humidity, etc. So this is a live vegetation system, because it's done with the landscape architect, and there is a specific music that is played there. So this is what they do. And they invite us to do an installation there. And so, alright, I said, okay. It is on a garden, so I cannot escape from the image on the right. The image on the right is a Béloger, famous frontispiece of architecture that was done in the mid of the 18th century as a kind of refoundation of architecture based on the real rule of honesty, integrity, and nature. So it's the lady that is shown to the little architect there, she's sitting on the ruin and showing the art, the primitive art, as the symbol of our regeneration, as starting over, etc., etc. Typical of, like, the starting of the humanistic architecture of the Jew and the others, in some way you may interpret. So, since that image is part of my imagination, thinking about doing something in the garden, I really wanted to do a primitive art again. But I really wanted to do a primitive art of a new generation, of a new phase. That's why the primitive art has to deal with these issues, particularly has to deal with the issues that space is real information. So, what's happening there is something quite simple at the end, we can see it. So these are some of the elements that they have dealing with sound. We change the lady a little bit. Thank you.
All right, what happens is very simple. The person sits there, and with his movement, his movements are captured by sensors, of course, and those sensors change some parameters of the music. Don't change the music. This is a very important point. Change some parameters of the music so that basically while the person acts in the environment, the music reacts to that. And the sensation, I think it is really beautiful because you are sitting in this simple, almost primitive situation, because you are sitting basically in the most primitive environment that you may think. It is even more primitive than Abbé Léger. He used 4 trees. We only used 3 trees. 3 apple trees. So it was even minimum. And then there was this hamaca there. And but the sensation of moving your body, your entire body, with together with the shape, in that together with the music, really gives you the idea that the space that you are in is not just something that is there, but it's something that you can negotiate with and you can manipulate with. So it's really the basic idea behind all this. And you know how many implications these things may have in many different situations. With the architects of the group, particularly two of them took care of this, that is Sarducci and Ampolo, that really do the actual work on all this. They've done also a very interesting experiment. I don't think I have locally, I have to, okay. Okay, we can see it. Okay, let me see if I have locally. Okay. Because they were very interested in the sociological aspect, because the installation was very successful. And what they spent a lot of time in doing was this short movie, and they neglected a real recording of the actual setting that I did with my camera. That's why it's so cool. So because they all the time they worked on that, it was fundamental for them. So she sees all different behaviors inside the primitive art, kind of recording that is something that they like to do. And then, so even this little thing may have a lot of different situations, not only bring new ideas, I hope, but also being, even as itself, being used in different kind of situation, particularly to things that different type of therapy that you can do it in spaces like that, because as soon you associate certain condition of difficulties, you immediately understand how these things can be very, very important and nice. Okay, so I think that is 6:30 is more or less about it. Okay, thank you very much.
I would like to thank Professor Saggio. I think he gave us such an exposure to many ideas and many things that we can now think and look in a different way from the way that we are used to think about issues. And I would like to ask
yes.
you
yes.
to look at your thesis work
okay.
slowly, more slowly, because we were looking at them so quickly, and I think it's an interesting part
okay.
just to pass through.
You think that there is energy in the...
Like 1 minute more, pass through the project. Just visually, we don't have to spend an
okay.
hour to explain it, but I see really interesting work
yes.
here that
yes.
it could be...
Okay. Fine.
Scroll a little
that is
bit.
Like a beast, you know, when,
right.
when they are
exactly.
the fingers. So this basically the can you see what it is? Here we are. Right here. Right here. what to find it locally. Again, where, okay, right here. Many of these ideas, of course, have been implemented in different ways in the thesis, particularly in the thesis that had to do with architectural design. It's important that in the thesis you have to understand that the thesis are not experiments, are real projects. So this is absolutely crucial for us and for our school. So the thesis are thesis in architectural design. That means that they must be a project. So there must be a research phase that is very intense and very important, that involves many of those aspects, but at the same time must be what I call technically a landing. That means that at a certain moment research must go down and arrive to design an actual building. So all the pieces are built in that way. What we saw before, the dancer, it is basically one example in which there is a lot of experimentation that I can show you. This one that is an interesting work, I think. If this one is okay. Let's see. All right. I hope we can start again. I hope. Okay. This is only one of 20 theses. All of them can be accessed online, so can be studied, and Professor Perdellini has also a book that presents them all in publication, can be seen all in publication, etc. Just use this time. Come si dice this in English? Non so come si dice this. The extra time, General Singer, do another, the last song after the. Yeah. So, for example, in this case, I'll describe in 5 minutes this project. The students that decide to take a thesis with me is an important step. They have to do the course, the information technology and theory course first, which is very intense and very kind of important in their curriculum if they want to do it. If they like the course and are really engaged, and of course they get good results, they can apply for the thesis. When they come to me with the thesis, I will tell them, are you really sure? Because the first decision is the advisor choice, is the single most important decision of the whole process. So I kind of wait a little bit in order to show if there are other options, how much they are motivated. Of course, I study the curriculum and see if there is a basic understanding. When that is done and we mutually decide that we can go, it happens the second most important step, that is decide what the thesis is, which is not said at the beginning. We really have to find a situation that is rich, complex, interesting enough, innovative, and at the same time may open the student some opportunities for his activities. So it will not be so simple. Not only that, I really always also want a situation that is clearly difficult. In terms among us, we call crisis. We are looking for crisis. We are looking for difficulties. We are not looking for normal situations in some way. So the students generally start to explore in all different directions in order to find that. Some of them, they start to explore the city itself. Some, they start to think of other issues, for example, the relationship dance architecture, and finding only after a process the site. And others, so each thesis starts differently. In this particular case, the students start to explore Rome, the city of Rome, to find a situation of difficulties, and he, after experiment, looking this, finding finally found this large park that is called Villa Doria Pamphili, one of the largest parks around the downtown Rome, that was cut in the 60s by an highway, and the cut was done because of connecting the Olympic site in a more efficient way, but it remained that crisis, that horrible situation of an highway cutting a beautiful park. So we agreed that that was a very interesting topic to tackle. And then he went on research and started studying the Villa Doria Pamphili, and he found out, of course, that Villa Doria, everything becomes of course, you know, after the beginning. Every other decision in some way is natural. And being finding Doria Pamphili, of course, found that Borromini was involved into the design of it, because the family Pamphili was the same family of Piazza Navona, in which he did many, many things. Then, of course, we decide to make, as a building, to tackle this situation, a museum of opera borrominiana, museum to the Borromini, that is also, of course, a place of studies, work, and it's also a place where new architects and artists can do installations related to Baroque architecture and Borromini. So, only about these three steps that are very important, because of the process, there are three very innovative steps, each one, because the idea, for example, of making a Borromini museum in Rome is completely innovative. The idea to make it in Villa Doria Pamphili is innovative, and the way to build the crisis of the cut with this building is completely innovative. So the process, in some way, allowed that. So that's why the book altogether represents all different ideas that we are basically giving to the city. And if Rome would be a normal place, they will jump into these ideas. But it's not. Anyway, the other normal kind of condition, it is that, of course, Borromini was dealing with diagrams a lot in his own way. You may call it diagrams, actually, in many, many, many ways, or we may like to call it diagrams. But anyway, there are geometric forces that are absolutely fundamental in his understanding of making architecture. And of course, diagram is also a key word of what we are doing today. We don't even want to mention that. So an hybridation of the true concept of the way that Borromini was doing diagram today and the way that the diagrammatical way of thinking of today architecture since at least 25 years is being developed, merged together. And there is another condition, of course, that is that one of the membrane type of structure. Particularly, this has been also developed in Italy by a very good engineer that is called Musumeci, that he did already in the 60s start to think of structure in a membrane way. So in a kind of continuous way to deal with forces. And here are examples. So the three ideas together brings basically to the idea what the project will be. The project will be, you see it here, will be a membrane that diagrammatically it is hooked in different places of the surrounding areas in order to organize forces and fluxes and typical things that you do with diagram. It acts as a bridge in some way, but it's not a bridge because it is a building. And in terms of the program, this project, as every other project that I do as thesis, are mixed projects. In reality, there is a part that is residential, a part that is commercial, a part that is educational, a part that we always call infrastructural, and a part that is of what we call rebuilding nature, that means to regain new level of integration between nature and architecture, which are kind of five key points that we always do. Then there is the development of the natural architectural project that will function and that will work and that will be plausible and logical here. And then it was another component. Then, of course, was the idea that since the building placed on a highway And since today we have all kinds of technologies, we can use our knowledge not only to make a logical build in terms of use of solar heating, exposure and all that, and being a very efficient building, but also to be active, because the building today can also be acting, working as a filtering of air, for example, being used as a transformation element. And imagine that we have just there nanotechnology that will arrive in a certain moment, we jump into our day life without really even perceiving when these things happen, because we are right there. Something similar to the internet. At a certain moment, you know, we were emailing each other with those strange terminals, I remember. And at a certain moment, the internet arrived. It was a big revolution. And I think with nanotechnology, we are already doing things like that. Even in Italy, the Meyer Church has a type of concrete that through nanotechnology, it is basically self-cleaning, and we are doing a kind of new cements that have this kind of effect, and then this is just the beginning of something that will emerge very much. So the building will be more and more active also in several processes through different type of technologies, but I think the nano will be probably the most effective one, because it will be really everywhere. So the projects are, and this is one of 20 projects or so, all can be accessed by, so in this case there is the old project. I just showed a few images before reduced, but here there is the old project, because the old projects are basically put it in the web in all details, because are done in this way for many reasons, one of which will be that everybody can study that, and I think the only way that you get collaboration with others is surely by giving, and the other reason is because the new students can study these things in a lot of details. It becomes something very important, so each thesis can grow, basically. If you click this link, you go, for example, here, that you go to the old thesis. So each of these are really large work that are different, very different topics. They deal with different issues, but so there are many. Oops, what's another thing? Okay. So there are many projects. You can find whatever you can just play with it. There are many things there if you are interested to follow that didactic aspect. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm glad that you like it. It's my pleasure to be here with you.